Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Tonight, I'm proud to bring you Living Labyrinths with Athena Dugan. Greetings and welcome, Athena. How are you?
Fine. Thank you. Hi, Hercules. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm really looking forward to your show today.
Great. Okay, so I have a great artist with me today. His name is Christopher Kaczmarek. He's a New York-based artist, but he also is involved in a lot of labyrinth projects.
Wow.
So here's Chris. Thank you, Chris, for being here and spending time with us talking about your labyrinth projects that's coming up. But let's get people familiar with you for a little bit. You're a New York-based artist, and you're a professor as well. And a lot of the work that you've been doing has spanned both experimental and traditional practices, which include sculpture, site-specific installations, and performance and video, right? And a lot of these were built in circuits and solar power objects. So your work is often interactive and designed to guide the viewer towards a deeper contemplation around the inhabited environment. Wow, and you receive your an MFA in visual arts and a MA in modern and contemporary arts history, theory, and criticism from Purchase College, State University of New York. And you're currently an assistant professor of interdisciplinary art and a program coordinator of the visual arts program at Montclair State University in New Jersey.
Indeed,
Chris.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here, Athena. Thank you.
Great. That's good. Now, you know what drew me to you is that a friend of mine had sent me she showed me pictures of someone drawing labyrinths on the street, and I'm like, why is that guy dressed in a business suit drawing labyrinths on the street? And so I had to click on it, and lo and behold, you were doing this amazing project it's part of a collaboration of a company, Art in Odd Places.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The work that the work that we had this lucky encounter with, so that we could make this connection, was called Labor Lines, the work of contemplation, and it was a piece that I did through Art in Odd Places, which is an organization that holds a kind of public art festival every year in downtown Manhattan. They've been doing it for something like 15 years, and this past year, the theme was normal, actually, for this, and with the real idea that we had a very not normal year previously, and that what is normal is often quite abnormal. And with that in mind, I looked at drawing 100 chalk labyrinths on 14th Street, all the way from Avenue C to the Hudson River. It was about 2 miles from Avenue C to the Hudson River. And doing that while wearing a full sort of dark suit. And all of that was about labor, like I say, like work. And the use of the labyrinth symbol was also conflating labor with contemplation, which is another type of work. It's important work. It's work that we should all have the privilege and opportunity to do. And the labyrinth, I think, is a structure that allows us to do that. And so I kind of appropriated that symbol and brought it into this performance, where I was also doing this repetitive sort of, assembly line approach to the creation of these 100 labyrinths. I just kept on drawing them and walking down the street, drawing the next one and walking down the street and drawing the next one. So as I was very uncomfortable in a suit and in the heat and all of this, but, you know, it was about the work and not the contemplation while still using that contemplative symbol.
Right. Wow. So was it the labyrinth? Was this a symbol that you've always seen, or why the labyrinth?
The labyrinth, for me, my path to the labyrinth, as it were, was started by a walk, the Camino de Santiago. Do you know the Camino de Santiago?
I can't say I do. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Then this is a great opportunity.
you can tell me all about it.
it's this amazing experience. I walked the last 200 kilometers of the Camino de Santiago with my wife, Patricia, back in 2016, and it really was a transformative experience. It's a pilgrimage, and it's been going on for quite a while. It's in northern Spain. You start in France and walk across the Pyrenees and then across northern Spain to Santiago, and then, you know, you're absolved of your sins or something like that. But for me as an artist, I found that that walk was just an incredible experience that did a lot of the things that I was doing with my work prior, which, as you mentioned in the introduction, had a lot to do with sort of technology and interactivity and those kind of things. And it was focused on having people think differently about their space and how they inhabit it and that kind of thing. And the Camino, this walking experience, interestingly, on retrospection, provided this type of experience. And from that, there's a strong connection with the idea of labyrinths to the idea of pilgrimages. And that brought me to labyrinths. And labyrinths, once again, are these amazing tools for this transformation of your relationship with the space that you inhabit, both physically and sort of intellectually and spiritually.
Absolutely. Wow. So this is amazing. So that inspired you to come back, do this art project, and incorporate the labyrinth, because a labyrinth, like you said, it is like a pilgrimage, and the Celts used to do it. You know, the labyrinth was a pilgrimage for them, or just the journey. So I could totally understand how that relates. So let me just ask you something. When you were doing these labyrinths, you did 100 in a day. So what was it? Was it like it was longer than 9 to 5, I take it? Like, what was the process? I mean, when did you – how was the process?
Yeah, it took less time than I anticipated, to be honest. Because I was really focused on it. You know, I wasn't interacting with people on the street. I had some people with me who were taking pictures, and my wife was there kind of fielding questions to people who were asking questions. Because, again, the sort of performance aspect was the focus on the labor and not sort of comfort or interaction or friendship or sharing. It was this very direct focus. And so we started around, I think, 11 o'clock and ended somewhere around 4:30 or 5 o'clock. So it wasn't even a full 9 to 5, but it was a hard day's work.
It's interesting. It's funny because when people walk the labyrinth, there's like this intention and there's this like transformation that occurred. So I could imagine like there must have been some kind of transformation or some kind of – did you have some kind of spiritual connection? Even though you said it was more like for labor – but was there like one time, at one point when you were drawing these labyrinths, that you had some kind of maybe spiritual connection or an aha moment or something that came in between your art and the labor of drawing these lines?
Yeah, definitely the experience, the labor of doing it, sort of following that line of 14th Street all the way the 2 miles, going through the different neighborhoods, doing the same action in different neighborhoods with different sort of psychogeography for each of the spaces that we passed to, that was an interesting connection. You know, talking about lines and labyrinths, this became an unwound line. That was the straight line across 14th Street. And the line of connection being the repetitive symbol of the labyrinth also happening there. It's interesting. I used to be a welder. And one of the things that I would do, you know, you might be putting together 20 different tables in the day. You just come with all of your parts and you would start putting the parts together. It's this repetitive motion. And it was part of this sort of ingrained sort of kinesthetic, the knowledge in your hands, right? You didn't necessarily even have to think about it anymore. And once you were engaged with that task, your brain could go to another place. You know, your mind could wander into this more meditation state when you're actually kind of working quite hard. And that actually happened to me as well during that performance. As I was doing the labyrinth over and over again, you know, the Seventh Circuit Classic Labyrinth was a labyrinth that I used, and it was the seed pattern. And then I was able to draw a labyrinth in under a minute.
Wow.
It really just became, again, this. I didn't necessarily even have to think about it anymore, and it was this space where my mind was in this meditative space. I wasn't interacting with people, although I was surrounded by people. I wasn't, you know, distracted by them. I was focused on the labor, but that labor allowed me to focus on just sort of meditation almost. It was an interesting space. I'm planning on thinking about that more and trying to articulate it better.
So that's really interesting though, because when you started this project, okay, you started with the seed pattern for the classical labyrinth. Now, did that seed pattern each time, did you do the seed pattern each time, or did you just work from a line perspective?
No, I would start with the seed pattern each time, the sort of the cross and the four dots and the four little C's pointing out from it there, and then do the loops.
So what was it like? Did you have like a certain dimensions that you were going to work with, or you just went with the flow of this is where you're going to get these labyrinths from here to there?
Well, the dimensions were based kind of upon two things. I was doing it along the sidewalk in New York City, and I didn't want to sort of impede people's walking as I was working in any meaningful way. So I kept it usually within one square of the sidewalk. And then the other was each labyrinth pretty much used up one piece of sidewalk chalk. That was kind of the scale, was one piece of sidewalk chalk. On occasion, you know, it was a little more or a little less, but on average it was one piece of sidewalk chalk. So they ended up being, I don't know, probably about 2.5-3 feet in diameter.
Oh, that's not bad. 2.5-3 feet. So it was more like a symbol for people to see. I mean, I would think that if some people saw it, it could have been like some kind of psychic cue. I mean, there's labyrinths. Have you ever been to the labyrinth down in Battery Park? Because there's a huge walkable labyrinth down in Battery Park. They have it closed off at like 6 o'clock where you can walk that.
Yeah, I've been to Battery Park, but I did not know there was a labyrinth there. I'll definitely have to check that out now again.
That's great.
Yeah.
So what challenges?
I mean, the labyrinth being 2.5-3 feet in diameter, you wouldn't necessarily walk the labyrinth, but on social media, there was this amazing response, and also people that have just I've run into, and they found out that, oh, that was you, because each of the labyrinths were just about 100 feet apart. You could kind of see the next one from where you were.
And since
it created a line all the way along 14th Street, and 14th Street is very heavily traveled, I was seeing on social media people who were like, who's doing these labyrinths? You know, I went down and then there was this next one and this next one. And so So it became this, they walked the line of labyrinths, if not necessarily the line of a labyrinth. So
right,
I thought
right.
that was pretty interesting. And then speaking of the labyrinth as a symbol, there was a social media post of a gentleman who, I guess, a labyrinth was a very meaningful symbol for him, and he had been having a very hard day. I guess he got some news about his heart, some medical news and that kind of thing, and he posted to social media just sort of like this open thank you to whomever drew the labyrinth, because, you know, he saw that, and it was like just what he needed at that time. And I had the pleasure of, you know, messaging him saying, it was me, thank you so much, I'm glad that you were able to get that out of the labyrinth.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow. Yeah, because it does have some very healing qualities about it, and it's, you know, it's the message that you get when you walk it, you know, it's like a metaphor for your life journey as well. So what, before we get on to talking about the labyrinth in your personal life, when you were doing this project, did you face any challenges? Like, I don't know, was there one point where did you have your own personal journey? Like, was it easy to separate, like, your project from, like, getting, I don't know, like, I guess you would have gotten personally involved because that's your project that you're doing. But was there a spiritual part that came out? I mean, what challenges did you face while you were creating this project?
Well, the first was probably organizational, of course. There's a lot of work that goes into something that may even be this simple. It's interesting. I mean, I have this project, but I've also built some other large-scale walking labyrinths, you know, that are like 60 feet in diameter. And I don't know if you build labyrinths, but it seems kind of simple. Like, oh, we're just going to put some stones into this area that's going to form a labyrinth. But once you get out there, you know, doing the layout and the labor of it all and making sure you have all the tools and machines or machines and buckets to move rocks.
Yeah,
really
absolutely.
Machines. The machines were my wonderful wife and another great volunteer and myself carrying rocks. But, yeah, it's the first challenge, I think, is just organizational. And, you know, similar to walking a labyrinth, you need to prepare yourself, right? It's not something you just I'm going to start doing this. You start walking a labyrinth with a question or an intent, something you're going to engage with during the process, even if it's just the question of what should I be engaging with at this time, you know. So there's this preparation and in this work and in the building of labyrinths, again, there's this sort of preparation. And then in this work and in the building of the sort of larger labyrinths, there's also just the labor, which is similar to the walking of a labyrinth, like the labor of actually walking, doing this
right.
movement, this progression through space, your body in this space. And it is concentrated in a specific space, similar to the building. You're concentrated on building a labyrinth in that space. And similar to the work on 14th Street, it was very specific to the length of 14th Street. So, you know, you have the challenge of preparation. You have the challenge of labor. And to be honest, there's a certain challenge of persistence as well. I mean, especially with the 14th Street performance.
True.
It was a rough day. The next day I was very, very sore from crouching down and drawing and standing up and crouching down and drawing and standing up. And similar to the labyrinth built in New Canaan where you're just carrying rocks all day, you know, you have to have a certain commitment to it.
Yeah.
You have to feel this devotion to the completion of the task and this idea that completion will be something worthwhile, something beneficial. Similar again to walking a labyrinth, you know, because labyrinths aren't like hedge mazes where you can't like get out if you don't want to. You can just usually step off of a labyrinth if you so choose. It's that choice to be dedicated, to committed to the completion of the task of the labyrinth with an idea of the benefits that might come to you through this work.
Right. And also, you took this project, right? You took it somewhere else where you did 38 individual labyrinths. Yeah,
that yeah,
was you
yeah,
took
yeah.
it up to the cloisters.
Yeah, I morphed it a little bit. The one on 14th Street, you know, working with the Art and Odd Places and the ethos of that whole thing was very sort of focused on labor and the normalization of internalized capitalism and whatnot. The one up at the Cloisters where I drew 38 chalk labyrinths encircling the Cloisters, that was a similar action but a much different kind of approach. That was more of a celebration, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
And it was wonderful because it almost took as long to draw those 38 as the 100. And part of that is because with the one on 14th Street, I was sort of devoted, like the act. But with the 38 labyrinths up encircling the Cloisters, it was about this celebration of the Cloisters as an institution in the community, and kind of encircling it as a protective act, and the relationship of the labyrinth as a symbol that's been used in medieval times quite often in the medieval collection that's available in the Cloisters. So there's all these connections, but it was also this idea of celebrating, hopefully, this emergence from dark times, right?
Right.
This renewal as our lines of our lives continue forward into hopefully happier times post-COVID. And with that in mind, you know, when anybody would stop and talk or say, you know, what are you doing? We would stop and I would chat with them. And, you know, I even did a little how to draw a labyrinth workshop at the end of it for some people that came along and were interested in sort of being able to do it. We ran into a really great group of motorcycle enthusiasts who had stopped at the Cloisters in order to rest for a moment. And I had to kind of ask them if I could pass on through and draw a labyrinth in the midst of them, which, you know, might have been a little uncomfortable, but it was actually quite wonderful because they were like, oh, what are you doing here? And I was like, oh, and I got to sort of share the history of the Seven Circuit Labyrinth and, you know, the meaning of the labyrinth and what I was doing with this group of motorcycle enthusiasts. And one even said, oh, that'd be a great symbol to put on my bike. And I was like, yeah, it would.
That's great. That's how we want to get the labyrinth around to a lot of people. So you this wasn't your first experience with the labyrinth, though. So your journey's been a long one. And did it start long before your pilgrimage in Spain?
Well, the connection with the labyrinth has really, with real intentionality, been a growth from the work that I've been doing artistically since my journey in Spain, since the pilgrimage in Spain. You know, I was looking at contemporary walking pilgrimages and walking as a way of making art, basically walking art, walking as an artistic practice. And oops, I lost my train of thought there.
No.
I made that connection with the labyrinth from the walking pilgrimage, but I have been for the past couple of years working with the concept and the ideas of labyrinths in a number of different pieces. So probably one of the first ones after I came back was the idea of the line as labyrinths. I did this work called Line as Labyrinths. And similar to 14th Street, where there was like a one line going through Manhattan, this line went from the top of Manhattan, the northern end, all the way down to the southern end from the bridge. What's the name of the bridge at the very top?
Not the George Washington Bridge. Yeah. No.
Yeah, you know the one.
The George Washington, the one that goes to Henry Hudson. Yeah,
the Henry Hudson, exactly. There it is. The Henry Hudson Bridge all the way down to Battery Park, in fact, where I just learned there's now a labyrinth, so I need to go there again very soon. So it's about 14 miles, and the idea was that sorry, my wife just texted me. It's the Broadway Bridge, actually.
The Broadway Bridge.
It's the Broadway Bridge up in northern Manhattan and then all the way down to Battery Park. And basically we followed Broadway And the idea was the unraveling of a labyrinth into a line, right? Because ultimately, at the end of it, a labyrinth is a line, a singular line that you follow, right? It's a unicursal, a single path.
Absolutely.
And thinking of, so thinking of paths and thinking of singular lines, I did some research and I found out that Broadway is actually the only remaining line of desire in Manhattan, or path of desire, as it's sometimes called in architectural terms. And paths of desires are paths that are created by people who walk and create the lines that they need in order to get from the one place that they need to get to the other place. And you'll probably see them sometimes where people kind of cut a little corner around a sidewalk where, you know, they don't have to walk all the way in this 90-degree and path, and they follow the path that they desire. And this was interesting to me on a couple of levels, because this was Broadway is the only remaining path of desire in Manhattan. Everything else has been wiped out by the European grid that's been laid upon it. So the Wekesqeck Indians, actually, that was a Wekesqeck path, and that one remained Broadway.
Wow.
So there's this amazing connection to the desire of humans to walk a path, which again connects to labyrinths, the desire to walk a path. And so I took that as a labyrinth that was a line through Manhattan. And we walked down the length of Manhattan with the sort of same idea of intentionality and focus that one would take while walking down a more traditional labyrinth. And it turned out to be a really, really amazing experience. And it really, speaking of how labyrinths give you the ability to reconnect with a space, or re-envision or reimagine your space within a space, it definitely transformed my understanding and connection to all of the different neighborhoods in Manhattan. As in one day we walked down this line, we walked down this labyrinth that had been built from the path of desire, I was able to find a different relationship with Manhattan, since I'd been to many of the places along that line, but they had never been connected. But the labyrinth, the line, Broadway, that path of desire, that historic path of desire, by walking it, it became that connection. And by having that connection, Manhattan as a place to inhabit, as a place to exist within, became transformed. It was really quite amazing.
Wow, that is. I mean, it's good to know that Manhattan isn't the maze that people think it is. You know, you have your meandering path that leads you directly, you know, to where you want to go.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Yeah, so that's an amazing discovery. I want to look more into that, too, because I never thought to look at the Manhattan streets, because I always thought it was very confusing. But actually, there is a direct line to getting you where you need to go. Just follow that path, especially down in that area. Do you mean like East Broadway? Right? Is that the area you're talking about, or like closer to maybe not that far?
Well, we walked the full length of Broadway, all the way from the Broadway Bridge at the very, very top, and then all the way down Battery Park. It's a line that traverses from north to south the full length of the entire island.
Yeah.
So.
But at 127th or 125th, it breaks up a little bit, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, you still follow that line.
It's a line.
That's interesting. That's really good to know. And now you can, like, whoever in the city, whoever visits New York, they can check that out for themselves, try to make the whole, get a map of New York and just try to follow the line straight down Broadway. Yeah, it is really interesting. If you look at the maps, you can, like, sort of create some kind of, a labyrinthial type journey by just following the lines. So let me ask you, though, you have a project that's coming up too, in which It's up in New Canaan, right?
You've
created a full-size labyrinth, and you use, it's a 60-foot in diameter, right? Labyrinth. And you used the rocks from the land, or did you have to transport them in?
No, that's the one that I was kind of mentioning earlier as a corollary of the creational labyrinth, having the same sort of steps almost of the interactional labyrinth, the preparation and the labor and the perseverance. And yeah, it's up in New Canaan, Connecticut, at the Watson Symington Preserve, which is part of the New Canaan Land Trust. And it's a really wonderful little park there in the Land Trust. And the labyrinth itself is about a year old now. It was part of the inaugural Land Trust sculpture trail. They commissioned several artists to come out and put some work in the Land Trust. And the labyrinth actually they kept.
Great.
Yeah, the work was intended just to be up for 1 year for the sculpture trail. And they asked me, would you like to go ahead and leave this one here? And I said, yes, of course, because as you mentioned, it's actually made out of a lot of rocks, and I had no desire to move all the rocks again after moving them to build a labyrinth. But yeah, we made a 60-foot diameter, seven circa, my favorite labyrinth, as you might have guessed from the work and my discussion of it.
It's a
seven circa classic labyrinth. Yeah, it just has such a great history to it, and the form of it, as an artist, the form of the Seven Circuit Classic Labyrinth references so many things that it's. But anyway, sorry, I got off the track in terms of the story about building the labyrinth in New Canaan. As mentioned, it's 60-foot stone, and when I was first writing the proposal for the commission, I did not know exactly what would be available within the space, so I left it kind of open. And I was very lucky, actually. Aaron, the custodian of the space up there, he's when we met, he was like, I know exactly where this needs to go. And he was right.
Wow.
He took me down this trail, and it was like, I think this would be like the perfect place for it. And it really was. It was this fairly clear space. There were a couple of trees in it. It tilted just a little bit so that you could see it from the trail. You know, it had a great view. And then the sort of clinching amazing part was this space in Connecticut had been at one time used as farmland. And at that time, there is a lot of rocks there. So farmers would just have to take these rocks and move them off the field in order to make them farmable fields. And there was this big, big pile, maybe about 20 yards down the trail, of these rocks.
Wow.
So I was able to use the sort of native rocks of the land that farmers had moved in the past and reconfigure them in the trail, right up the trail there into this Seven Circuit Classic Labyrinth. And with about 4 days of really good work with my wife Patricia, and a volunteer, John Henry, who I am both Patricia and John Henry forever indebted to, we built that 60-foot Seven Circuit Classic Labyrinth out of stones. And we're going to be having an event there, actually, this Saturday at 4 o'clock, June 19th. So I'd like to invite all of your listeners to come out to the New Canaan Land Trust and on Saturday, which is the eve of the solstice, come out and we'll talk about labyrinths a little bit, maybe walk it together.
Great. Now, is there a website where do they have to register for it or just show up?
The New Canaan Land Trust would like to know if you're coming. So you can just go to New Canaan Land Trust and look that up on the old Google, and it'll pop up as an event. Or you can even just look up, I think, like Labyrinths and Kesmeric at this point. It might be the first thing that pops up on Google because it's a new website, right? A new site.
Right. Well, oh, cool. Right. New Canaan Trust. I think it's .org, right? .org or .com, right? Or Chris Kaczmarek. That's KACZMAREK. Cool.
Yes. Perfect. Yeah. So Sorry. I was just in front of a computer. I'm like, I should really know exactly how to promote thing better.
That's right. There's .com, all these different dots.
Yeah, if you just type in New Canaan and Labyrinth, it's the first thing that pops up right now. It's part of the New Canaan Chamber has it listed. The New Canaanite has it listed, newcanaanite.com. Talk and Walk on the Eve of the Solstice. Hamlet Hub has it listed. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Definitely. There it is. NewCanaanLandTrust.org. It's actually not the first thing to pop up, but NewCanaanLandTrust.org. You were right there. Thank you, Athena.
Okay, sure. No problem. So let me ask you. So now you have this amazing labyrinth. I saw pictures of it, and it's absolutely gorgeous. You guys all did a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful job. And it's now you've created something that's going to be there for I'll say a lifetime, because those are huge rocks, and it's like no one's going to move those rocks. You know, maybe they might get dusted over, but somebody could just go by and clean them up, right? So, but what's next for you after this? Is there another labyrinth project, or are you going to go solely back to concentrating on your art? Well, the labyrinth is kind of like art for you too, in a way.
The labyrinth projects are definitely part of what I consider my artistic practice, and you know, I think the labyrinth as a symbol, as a tool, is something that has definitely not been exhausted in the realm of art or in any other realm. I mean, that's probably a reason why it has persisted for, well, as far as we know, at least 5,000 years or so.
Like when you walk it though, when you walk the labyrinth, do you have some kind of, do you feel like you transform, or do you have a spiritual connection?
Yeah. I mean, walking a labyrinth, as I kind of mentioned, from the pilgrimage and the walking experience and that kind of focus, it is a transformative experience, right? You're engaging with this act, you're engaging with this object, you're engaging with this space, and as you do that, you're spending time, you're embodied in the space, and you become focused, right? You find a space that you've invited yourself into through the open invitation of the labyrinth, as a space for contemplation, as a space to reorient yourself within a place. Yeah. And that's definitely been something that I've found transformative in allowing me to connect with both the geography that a labyrinth is situated in, and I've been lucky to be able to build labyrinths in different geographies, and also the mental state that you have in that geography as you turn and circle and shift in space and in time. Mm-hmm. It also creates this interesting connection. I mean, you talk about some of the more historical labyrinths. The ones that I've been able to build are fairly recent, and some have even been temporary. But when you walk more historical labyrinths, you're connecting not just with the space and yourself in that space, you're walking with this tradition of other people that have walked in that space.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that history of that connection, like if you're able to go to Chartres Cathedral or something like that, people have been walking that for many, many years. And when you share that space with them, you're sharing this sort of tradition and this connection, and it becomes this connective line, not just between the point in time that you're there, but also to the history of this activity in that space and to the future of that activity in that space.
Yeah. This is true. And the labyrinth is great for that. I mean, for making that shift and to like having that energy passed down, you know, that what makes it in a way archetypal, like that energy that's passing down from, you know, person to person, history to history. And it's still like that energy that helps create that shift. So have you had the opportunity to walk the shark labyrinth?
I'm close. I was actually supposed to go this past spring, and then this COVID happened. So unfortunately, I've had to reschedule for spring of 22, but hopefully that'll happen there, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. But it's interesting you used the word archetype, and I think that's a great one to kind of talk about labyrinths, you know, this multicultural, universal sort of experience, this universal, a labyrinth's like an archetype which we can have a direct experience, right? It's not just a symbol or a feeling or a part of the human condition. It's something that we can have a direct experience with, and I think that's really something very special about a labyrinth as an archetype that is physical and has that direct experience. We can walk it, you know, it's a journey, it's a metaphor for a journey. And the more the labyrinth is used, the more meaning or power the space contains as the activities connected to the past, as I said, the tradition of others occupying the space for this purposeful purpose of walking and contemplating and bringing their energy to that space. That's great, the labyrinth as archetype.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And your work, though, that you do, since it has such a, it's almost like performance art, right? And your labyrinth became like a performance art for you, but now it's taking on a different flavor, because now you're making them full size for people to walk. I guess my question I'm wondering is like I think I had interrupted you when you were about to tell me what was next after this labyrinth project. Do you have other labyrinth projects coming up? And if so, are they performance art or are they labyrinths for other people to experience walking?
Yeah, I think I'm interested in having more access for other people to the labyrinths. I did the labyrinth in New Canaan, and I also built another 60-foot diameter labyrinth in Avery Point, which is out in Connecticut. I made that one out of individually placed orange survey flags, actually, like 2,000 of them.
Oh, wow, that's excellent.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. The call for that it asked artists to sort of interact and respond to the environment in a direct way, and it's out on a peninsula at Avery Point, and I thought about how windy it would be out there in the water, and so over 2,000 little flags built the lines of this labyrinth, and it was super windy out there, so all the flags would be flapping, and you'd have this kind of active line of a labyrinth, it was really, really a wonderful one. It was the Alexei von Schilt Gallery organized this exhibition. It was called Open Air, and again, it was in response sort of to COVID, because they couldn't have gallery exhibitions, so they activated their spaces, the grounds around their gallery, and I built that one, and I really, really liked that one too. And speaking of your actual question of like where we're going, although I've really enjoyed the drawing, the sort of performative aspects of drawing the labyrinths for the Labor Lines performance and the Circle of 38 Lines performance, I'd like to find a way to give the viewer or the interactor or the experiencer of the labyrinth work a more specific way of interacting with the labyrinth that's not just sort of an encounter or a visual, you know. I'd like to find a way for them to walk more as a part of the practice. Indeed, I'm not sure exactly how that's going to happen.
Right. Well, you just recently joined the Labyrinth Society, right? So you can find a lot of connections there, a lot of labyrinth enthusiasts, where you can make the connection for building more labyrinths or seeing more labyrinths. That would be great.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really interested in continuing to expand connections within the community and look at how labyrinths can be used in artwork. I'm also really inspired. I don't know if you know the work of artist Mark Wallinger. Have you heard of his work?
I can say no.
Okay, that's fine. But yeah, I bet you'll like what he did in the London Underground. He did about 270.
Oh, you know what? I feel like such a jerk. I do know. I'm so bad with names. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. His work was amazing. Amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So for listeners who may not know it, he did these wonderful labyrinth images. They were black and white enameled tiles, basically, like you could imagine the sort of signs in the subway system in London. But they were labyrinths and different for each stop. And it was this great reference of the language of the environment that the labyrinths were installed in. And then also how the subway system can be kind of confusing, but most people, you know, we travel as commuters. We're following this one line back and forth. But
exactly.
I thought it was brilliant, you know, the sort of access to the thought of a labyrinth while you are in this tunnel system, and the ability to use the labyrinth as a contemplation and the tunnel system itself as a space of labyrinthian contemplation, kind of like how I unpacked Broadway as a line of contemplation within this much more complex context.
Yes, so, that's anyway, what they say. Philadelphia is like a labyrinth too. And it's kind of funny, like when you mentioned his name, I'm like, oh my God, yeah. But his work, I absolutely love his work. And I think I was in London a year before he had started that project. And it's just amazing work. I mean, just to see that it's like a signpost as well. You sort of know where you are.
So, yeah, I'm really interested in finding more ways of taking the labyrinth as a symbol and allowing different points of access for people to experience the labyrinth. But I'm trying to find more active ways for that to happen. And, as I said, I'm not sure exactly how that's going to happen. That's always the challenge as an artist, to come up with these creative ideas. But I think I've got a good line pushing me forward so far.
All right. So, but with your work that you do, do you still get involved in welding? I mean, that's a great idea. Creating a labyrinth.
I work a lot with different materials. I worked as a professional fabricator, so as welding wood, glass, and I also work a lot with technology. So I'm interested also in thinking about finding ways of blending, perhaps 3D printing or even CNC routing and that kind of thing, in order to use the form of labyrinth and bring it into other artistic forms.
Well, I think you'll probably make a lot of connections with, there's a lot of labyrinth enthusiasts and a lot of professional labyrinth artists that you can probably find a lot of collaborations with, and you're in the right space, you know, at this time with the Labyrinth Society. And, you know, your project became really, a lot of people were really interested in what you were doing. So I think to take it further, you're right at
home.
Thank you.
I'm pleased and flattered by the attention the project has gotten, and I really, really appreciate the response from the community, and I look forward to, as you said, learning more and opening up more possibilities and potentials for collaborations, definitely.
That's right. That's what it's all about, possibilities and community and connections, right? So you have your show coming up on June 19th, the eve of the solstice. And what's the time?
It'll be at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock? Okay. Okay, 4 o'clock this Saturday on the – yes, this Saturday coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's
have, Sorry. I do have one other project that I just remembered because, again, it was going to happen this current summer, but it's been pushed away till summer 2022 through the Crit Lab, which is a really great artistic organization that organizes critique groups. They also do this wonderful trip to Italy where they're taking a group of artists to the Venice Biennial and then doing a residency in Valle Camunica, which I don't know if you know Valle Camunica, but that's actually one of the spaces where the oldest, some of the oldest petroglyphs of labyrinths are there.
Yes.
And so we're going there for a week for a residency, and we'll be doing some labyrinth-based activities there, as well as artistic-based activities. It's an artist residency, but I'm sneaking labyrinths in.
Oh, this is great. I mean, you'll have the inspiration right there, you know. That's excellent. So this is something that is this going to be a project that is going to be like live? I mean, you're an artist. It's going to be an artist residency. So is this something that's going to be online as you're doing it, or is it completely? I don't know.
I'm not sure, to be honest. I mean, it's a year out, and there's a number of different ways of approaching it. There's this really great space outside of the house where the residency is, which is, you know, on the side of this mountain in the valley. It's just beautiful. And I'm wanting to do something like at night with lights, right? So whether it's candles and sandbags or something like that, I'm not sure what it is exactly, but I'm really interested in forming a labyrinth out of light somehow.
Wow, that would be great.
It's to be determined, but it'll be good.
That's great. Yeah, I made I think it was about 60 foot in diameter labyrinth out of tea lights. Yeah, I had that many. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No,
battery operated tea lights. Yeah.
Where were you able to do that?
A friend of mine, she has a house in New Jersey, and she has all this land. So she said, oh, whenever you want to do something with a labyrinth, you know. So I did it as a Halloween project, and it was very successful, and I used all tea lights. So at nightfall, the lights came up, and the children ran like crazy through the labyrinth, and, you know, it was just very luminous and very, very nice. Nice ambience.
Yeah. Thinking about like the reconnection and the reassociation with meaning with space, there's that magical thing that happens at night.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. With the labyrinth too, when the light comes, you know, when the light comes up and it's night and it's like so transformative, you know, it's like a immediate shift.
Yeah, and that shifting of understanding, that shifting of presence.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Here it is. Oh, we have a few more minutes left. So you can tell me more about some of your labyrinth work. Are you planning on building some more labyrinths in the city? I mean, in between this and your residency, I mean, what's coming up for you now? So is it strictly art that you're going to work on? Is it more like some of your other forms of art?
Yeah, well, with the multifaceted practice that I have, there are some other projects that I'll be doing that aren't necessarily labyrinths. Connected, there's a show coming up in Connecticut. Of course, I'm horrible with promoting myself because I can't remember the name of the gallery, where I'll be making some solar-powered kinetic objects, kind of sculptural things that create sound through motion, but they're all solar-powered, so there's sort of connection with the sun and all of the meaning there. And I'm also, I have a solo show coming up in March of 22 that I'm interested to see how Labyrinth might be able to be brought into a more traditional gallery setting as well, and experimenting with that. I think that's Southern Connecticut. Southern Connecticut is where the Southern mm-hmm. Connecticut is where the solar powered kinetic sound objects will be going.
Oh, okay. Is that in relation to the show you just did, the art in New York City? You did a step into the future. Is that in relation to your solo projects?
Oh gosh, that's actually a whole nother.
Oh,
you
wow.
saw that as well. Yeah, I'm an interdisciplinary artist. I'm engaging with a lot of different subjects. Straight Through the Wall. There was a really great program. They show projections of videos outdoors on the walls of buildings around New York City, and they curate artists. It's an international program, artists from around the world, and I was lucky enough to be included in that. And honestly, that piece is about collaboration, and it was where I was collaborating with a computer in order to make the images that were the video. What I did was I used Google. I used an algorithm. Google is a computer algorithm to search for certain videos using the search terms like future, society, artificial intelligence, and that kind of thing. And from those videos that I found through Google, I selected several and put them into a folder on a computer, basically. But then I wrote a program that would edit those videos together in very creative and interesting ways. And so it ended up being this very odd collage that I didn't actually control the content of. The computer created it. So it was a collaboration between me as the one that selected and created the algorithm, but then the algorithm itself created the work. And then that was what was submitted and presented through the Straight Through the Wall showing just this last Thursday, actually.
So it didn't even repeat itself because the algorithm, was it always changing?
Exactly, yeah.
Wow.
You got it. Yeah, normally when I show this in a gallery, it wouldn't exist beyond the moment that it existed in. You know what I mean? Because it was a generative video. It would be generating itself in the moment that you saw it. For this particular event, I had to make it into a video, so I basically recorded whatever the computer created within a certain, 2.5 minutes or whatnot. But you figured it out instantly. That's great.
that's like great. So, what inspired you? I mean, I guess step into the future. I mean, that's enough where you have free range to do whatever you want. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, with the idea of looking forward to the future.
Wow.
And so I see our future will probably have collaborations between humans and machines in more sort of intellectual ways in the future. We right now have obviously collaborations with machines when you think about it in mechanical ways, but as artificial intelligence becomes inevitable, it's already been integrated into many aspects of our lives. There's going to be more intentional collaborations where artificial intelligence isn't just a tool, but actually a collaborator, something that's not just a thing. It's not just something to give us an answer or to execute a task. It will be making creative decisions.
Wow. Yeah, I wonder if it could give us some kind of interesting, labyrinths. I mean, triple,
okay, you just
quadruple.
Gave me an idea.
Okay, I want to hear all about it.
I gotta feed some labyrinth stuff to some AI and see what comes out.
Well,
the fun
thing
about AI right now is it doesn't understand anything. It gets things wonderfully wrong in the most beautiful and creative ways. So let's see what happens there.
Oh, wow. This is great. So you have to keep me posted on that and keep everyone posted about this, your labyrinth science projects. That's what they call them. Oh, Chris,
mad
wow.
Scientist.
Pardon interrupting. We have around a minute left, Athena.
Okay, Chris. Well, we got to wrap it up right now. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank you so much for being here tonight, Chris. And you guys, if you want to see my work on the 20th, I'll be having a labyrinth walk in Fairmount Park in Philadelphia. You can go to fairmountpark.com events, and you can see, you'll learn to make a labyrinth and walk one as well on this solstice night. And I want to thank Chris for being here. And you can see Chris's work at New Canaan in New Canaan, Connecticut. Go to newcananlandtrust.org to sign up for his event on June 19th at 4 p.m. Thank you, Hercules. Thank you, Chris. And
you're very welcome.
Thank everyone for listening.
And if you send me links to that in a personal message, I'll make sure I circulate them.
Great. All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Right,
and
thank you.
Whether you joined us live or whether you'll be listening later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, guys.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right.